On today's episode, Liz and I welcome Dr. Lori Scatty to the show, and we discuss a growing trend, that of midlife or gray divorce. Lori shares about what contributes to midlife divorce, principles from emotion-focused therapy to help couples, and has some great advice for younger couples as well. Lori Scatty is a licensed marriage and family therapist and AAMFT-approved therapy supervisor running a therapy practice in Pleasant Grove, Utah, called Compassionate Connections Counseling. She specializes in emotionally focused couples therapy and supervises therapists towards certification in the model. She has been an adjunct faculty member in the Marriage and Family Therapy Department at Brigham Young University, as well as Utah Valley University. For over three decades, she has practiced therapy, alternately with raising seven children, and has published several peer-reviewed materials related to her profession. In her spare time, she enjoys running, traveling, tandem bike riding with her husband, knitting, and playing the organ. She is convinced that grandchildren are one of life's best kept secrets. We hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to Stronger Marriage Connection. I'm Dr. Liz Hale, the psychologist, along with the professor, the esteemed Dr. Dave Schramm. And together we have dedicated our life's work to bringing you the best we have in valid marital research, along with a few tips and tools to help you create the marriage of your dreams. Well, it's kind of a dream of mine today to bring to you a marriage and family therapist, Dr. Lori Scatty. She is an amazing marriage and family therapist, somebody I've admired through the years, mainly by word of mouth. I've heard so amazing things about her. So it's really a delight for me to be able to meet her and to introduce her to you as well. Perhaps you've known a couple who have suddenly announced that after all these years, they're getting a divorce. It can feel confusing, surprising, and even just downright wrong when it comes to midlife divorce. So how does it happen? And to answer all these questions is Dr. Lori Scatty herself. Welcome to Stronger Marriage Connection, Lori. So good having you here.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. I've also heard many, many amazing things about you and watched you through the years and have a great deal of respect.
I wish we lived closer, Lori. I really do. I'm looking forward to keeping in touch post this particular podcast. But to you, midlife divorce, or sometimes we call it gray divorce, right, is not necessarily surprising for how the demise of a marriage can happen. You really have seen this a lot. And when you sit down with a longtime married couple on the verge of divorce, where do you start to help this couple uncover what led them to this crossroads? And is there hope from your experience?
Okay, so if I get a couple that comes in that's been married for a long time, one of the first things that I point out to them is just that the reason why the emotions are so discouraging and hopeless many times is because it is a relationship that matters so much. Generally, people don't make decisions to divorce lightly. It's a very fraught decision. And so there are really high emotions. But then I also want them to recognize that over the years, they've developed patterns of behavior that interact with emotions. And what happens is those patterns of behavior can start to take over. And so then they can really feel helpless. But if we can zoom out from those patterns and help them see what's happening and understand them better and try on new patterns of behavior, then they can start to reshape their marriage.
Ah, nice. And you're seeing more and more of midlife divorce. Do you have any idea why, Lori?
Well, people divorce at midlife for some of the same reasons they do younger. If you look at the research, it's an area that's studied actually quite frequently right now. Some of the conjectures about that are that divorce is not as frowned upon as it used to be socially. Another one is that as women, because generally they've been more economically disadvantaged, have more opportunities to make money and become financially independent, then they make autonomous decisions to divorce. And just vitality, you know, as we enjoy better health, I think sometimes people are and making independent, autonomous decisions about what they want to do with their lives. And these long-term marriages happen to coincide with a life cycle transition of midlife, where people are often evaluating their life choices and deciding what they want for the future.
Mm-hmm. Between now and the rest of my life, how do I want to live, right? And though they've invested 35 years, they still are willing to make a new decision. And I get some of that. Do you think is it couples together that are feeling the same way, or is it more women leading the way or men?
Well, Definitely women are making those decisions more frequently. And, you know, my clinical opinion is just, this is what I see, is that often you'll have a marriage where the most common pattern is a female pursuer, maybe somebody who has been trying to get connection for years, and a male partner. And again, this, I know that I'm being a little stereotypical. This just happens to be the bigger percentages that we see of marriages like this, but a partner who maybe is a little more reluctant to engage, is a little more confounded by emotion or talking about emotion, so they don't. And what happens is these pursuing partners who are very verbal sometimes will become burned out. So sometimes they'll use the term burned out pursuer. And their partners then think everything's okay because they're not talking about their unhappiness anymore. They've stopped trying to connect. And so they're
stopped complaining, right?
The partners think everything's great when actually it isn't. And then it's kind of a bombshell and they're shocked because they just weren't expecting it. They didn't see it coming.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I think about couples, Lori, that I know who have gone through this or going through this, there almost isn't a pattern, at least the ones that I know. You know, it's kind of different reasons for each one of these. So it's really hard to kind of say this is what's causing it, for example.
Yeah, always, you know, always it's at the individual level.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you're trained in emotionally focused therapy. I'm not a therapist, but I'm familiar with this EFT. And you say the emotions that couples experience in their attachment to each other is key. So what's the main goal of emotionally focused therapy? And what can a listener do today to strengthen their marriage through those key principles of EFT?
Well, the idea behind emotionally focused therapy is, again, that we experience some of our greatest emotions in our closest relationships. And for most people, this romantic partnership is their most important attachment relationship. You know, adult attachment only became a concept in 1987, but since then we have a lot of research that shows us what that looks like and what creates distress. And so ultimately, in emotionally focused therapy, what you're trying to do is help people organize those emotions, because we behave from those emotions and start to organize patterns. So you're trying to help people to understand how emotions are driving those patterns. And one of the biggest things they can do is start to develop curiosity and empathy. So people are always having different experiences. And sometimes that's hard because we see things from our point of view, but recognizing that your partner may be having a very different experience from you and getting curious and asking about what their emotional experiences are so that you can have genuine empathy is essentially what you're after. Because when you feel empathy from your partner, you're more likely to work with them and be more flexible in problem solving.
Yeah. That's interesting.
It seems like what I notice and what I'm not good at as a marriage therapist, I've noticed is slowing down a little bit. And that's what EFT seems to really do, Lori. Is that true? Let's just slow this process down and see if one partner can speak the words, the feelings of the other partner, just to really get that empathy stoked.
Yeah. And a lot of the reason you're slowing down is just because of our autonomic nervous systems. You know, if you look at polyvagal theory and how we respond to people and code safety and code danger and react to it, then we're really up against a lot of forces when we're trying to slow couples down. So yeah, that's imperative. And sometimes as therapists, we can be a little impatient, right?
I'd like to get to the end. I want them to be happy. And let's get to the resolve of this. So I think that's been the number one principle that I've seen that I'm trying to take away from EFT. So I appreciate the background. We have heard you use that term, restraint commitment. What is that, please? And how does it play a role in midlife divorce?
Well, Scott Stanley's the researcher who... one of the big names around commitment. And so several years ago, commitment came out as one of the most important variables for marital stability. You know, how likely is this couple to stay married? And it's actually, there are two kinds of commitment. One is personal commitment, where you feel free to exercise where you want to put your loyalty. The term is kind of like restraint. It's actually called constraint commitment. And constraint commitment are all of those variables that keep people feeling stuck. And it might be religious beliefs, it might be children in the home, it might be financial constraints. But there are those things where people might divorce, but they stay there because they feel these barriers to divorce. And so sometimes at midlife, those are removed. And so I think it's quite possible that that's also why we might see a resurgence of divorce at that time.
Hmm. Yeah, there's fewer barriers. Maybe they're empty nesters or fewer things that are kind of keeping them together. Yeah, I love that work with that dedication commitment versus that constraint commitment. Lori, would you be willing to share? I love hearing stories, examples, kind of pulling back the curtain a little bit without sharing, names or anything like that. Would you be willing to share one of the success stories with couples where two partners were able to recover, to restore their relationship after being on the brink of divorce? And how were they successful at turning back the tide?
Okay. Yeah. I can think of one actually from several years ago that stands out because my protocol is to meet with a couple together and then I'll meet with them separately. And I remember feeling just sometimes you get a sense of whether people really want to stay married or they're just kind of going through the motions. Right. And so after talking to this wife, I came away thinking, oh, this couple is not going to pursue therapy. And if they do, it's really not going to change because four decades earlier, literally four decades, there had been an affair, and this wife did not feel safe with this partner. And she had sort of resolved that she was going to live with this person and stay married. And at the individual level, felt some forgiveness, but really just did not have trust and safety and really didn't seem that interested. I mean, and she was just kind of tired of living disconnected, and she talked like divorce was more appealing. But then her husband was probably one of the most dedicated clients I've had. And sometimes we have biases against people that are older, which is, kind of unfair a lot of times, is that they don't have the flexibility to change, which isn't true. And he really dedicated himself to figuring this out. And he was reading supplemental materials. And they really generated probably one of the biggest shifts in the shortest period of time that I've seen. And one of the main differences was that as we reprocessed this affair, he was really present and empathic when she could talk about the pain to him in a way he wasn't defensive. Earlier, I think she tried to talk and he would get defensive because he felt shame and maybe powerlessness and helplessness to fix that. And instead, he was able to really show up and to ask about it and ask about her feelings. And she felt like he was being authentic. And so she had this different experience with him where for the first time, she really felt like he cared about the pain he had caused. And so that, and I would call that an attachment injury. Sometimes you get those big injuries like affairs early and people don't talk about them and they don't just resolve on their own. So sometimes in those long-term marriages, I'm checking for those instances as well.
Mm, wow. So decades have gone by. It just feels
four decades plus. Time.
Wow.
Yeah, because the injury that had happened in the first year of marriage, literally. Yeah.
And from that, in the moment of that injury, is there just, do you think, just gentle, pulling away a little at a time, Lori? A little at a time?
Attachment injuries are so tricky, right? I show it like this because you're trying to gain resolution and healing with somebody who's been just profoundly unsafe. And so you get the sense of who is this person? Your emotions are very disorganized. And forgiveness is really interesting there because it's kind of a two-part thing where it's a reduction in negative feelings towards one's partner, but also an increase of conciliatory feelings. Well, the first part's easier. So you'll see a lot of people who might reduce their negative feelings, but it doesn't necessarily make them want to risk take with this person to continue to build bonds. So that is most often where people get stuck. So in these long-term marriages, if I check in, it's really not uncommon that they've never had this increase in conciliatory emotional bonding experiences.
You really become a detective of sorts, don't you?
Yeah.
With emotional therapy. Oh my God.
We'll be right back after this brief message. And we're back. Well, let's dive right in.
Laura, you mentioned that you have a connection check-in that you teach your couples to use at home that involves asking three simple questions. And you have generously agreed to share them with all of us. I've got my pen and paper handy. So ready, set, go.
I love this. It's so simple. And I will tell you as a clinician that my couples who actually take the time to do it have always 100% of the time, I know I've got a small sample size, but 100% of the time have reported that it was helpful. And so what you do is you get a baseline on how connected you feel. And it's meant to be done routinely, whether it's nightly. I mean, I think that's a lot. You know, most of us are really busy. So I would say even weekly makes a difference. And the questions are, how connected to you do I feel since the last time we checked? More, less, or the same? And then the next question is, what has been happening in our relationship that would have impacted our connection? You know, so maybe we've been engaged in a move and that's been busy. Maybe the kids have been sick. Maybe we had an anniversary, so we're feeling more connected, right? And then the third question is, what is one small thing that would help me feel more connected? So how connected do I feel, more, less, or the same? What's been happening to impact it? And what is one small thing that would help me feel more connected? And just by checking in on it, it becomes a meta process. So if you're just checking on it, it becomes connecting just by doing it.
Yeah, it does. I like that. You just take turns, obviously. One person is the talker, one person is a listener, and then you switch. Ah, very nice. Thank you. You and I both see a fair number of affairs in our practices, Lori. And affairs happen where people gather, it seems, even on the internet, where one person effortlessly when one person effortlessly reaches out to a past love, how do you think affairs coincide with midlife transition? How can couples inoculate against them as well?
You know, that's interesting because I really did see a shift in about 2008 with smartphones and texting, the increased availability of texting and social media. And my belief is just that as children become more independent and start to leave, my guess is at least people with a little bit more time. There's a doctor named Nancy Kalish who studied affairs with old boyfriends and girlfriends. It was a qualitative study. She wrote a book. And what I found really fascinating about that was she said a lot of times people will contact and bond with old romantic interests because they feel younger, right? So as they're at midlife, they remember who they were at age 18 or 19 without all the stressors, right? And so they actually miss who they were and it re-energizes them. And I suspect that that's actually one of the risks. So, and proximity is always the foundation of affairs, right? So technology has increased our proximity.
Mm-hmm. 2008 was also that big crash, right? Market crash. It's interesting. Right? In a panic, I think we're trying to soothe ourselves as well, perhaps.
Yeah.
What was the name of the book, Lori? Do you mind sharing the title?
Oh, gosh. You know, I should have written it down. I could get that.
Tell us your name again and we can find it.
Yeah. We'll put it in our show notes.
Yeah. It's Nancy Kalish, K-A-L-I-S-H. And she's written a couple books. And interestingly, she started studying that because I think she had connected with an old love interest. So she wanted to understand that process better.
I appreciate her wanting to understand that. It is very powerful. Yeah, the memory, right? The brain just really holds those fun years.
Yeah, idealized. And also, just, I think this is worth saying, in any kind of technologically facilitated communication, you can always control your presentation. And that's important to know. So there's really no way to reality test that. And another thing people don't realize is that you disclose more quickly when you're not face-to-face. So what happens is you disclose these deeper emotions and then people mutually disclose. So the emotions are very real, right? It's just that it is with a version of somebody that they can control, right?
I think we call that fantasy. Is that right?
Yeah. It's not reality with people because their emotions are real. But it's, you know, what I'll say is it's just there's no way to reality test those situations. So comparatively, it's a flawed comparison to your real life spouse with bad breath.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That is interesting. Okay, Lori, I got to come back to this. I can't stop thinking about this couple. I'm so glad that they got help and where they're at. But like 40 years later, you know, after this affair during their first year of marriage. So I just feel like, man, so many couples are facing this midlife divorce. it's probably inspired you, at least I'm inspired, to do a little bit more work upstream with newly married couples as well, so they don't have to go decades with carrying attachment injuries or this feeling of, I don't feel close, but hey, I'll just wait another decade and our kids will be out of the house and then I'll divorce type of a thing. What's your best advice for young couples who are maybe kind of struggling through this thought? They may be listening to this podcast and they're thinking, man, I want to be that 2 decades from now, this midlife divorce. What advice do you have?
Well, first of all, just let me say how excited I am when young couples come in. Yes. Because I know that I'm more likely to make a difference. They've had less time to have these big injuries where they build resentment. I knew I was going to be a marriage therapist before I got married 34 years ago. And so I was always kind of dragging my husband to marriage seminars and learning about it, and all the education I felt like actually really made a difference. Not that I don't have challenges in my marriage, because that'd be weird, right? I mean, nobody has a perfect marriage.
It's not possible.
But I do feel like it was very useful. And so what I tell young people is, I want them to understand, first of all, the concept of marital drift, which is that just no matter who you are, because life is stressful, and you've got all these forces pulling at you, there is a tendency to pull away, and that you do need to put in effort, and the effort matters. So if you want a good marriage, you really need to work at it, which is getting educated, go to therapy early if you need to. I actually think this younger generation recognizes that and does get help earlier than maybe my generation. And so there's just so much of a difference they can make. It makes me so happy to think about it. Whenever young people come in.
Yeah, more intentional effort. And I think that you're right. There's more available today, more research, more resources, you know, podcasts, webinars, seminars. It just feels like that there's so much for couples to take advantage of, but they're so busy today that they have to intentionally make those choices. And then I love, we're breaking down hopefully some of the stigma with therapy and going to a therapist and getting help with your marriage from a professional. Huge, huge fans of that. So if you're listening and you need help earlier rather than later, but if it is later, still go and reach out and get the help that you need. Lori, one of the questions we like to ask all of our guests is this one. It is, what do you feel like is the key to a stronger marriage connection?
Well, that's interesting, because if I had to use one word, I would say empathy. Because again, you know, from an emotionally focused standpoint, the more genuinely empathic people feel, the more likely they are to help caretake each other's emotions. And I think empathy impacts all dimensions of marriage. And one interesting example just from the last few years is a book by Peggy Kleinplatz, who has been a sex therapist for a very long time. I have an edited academic book of hers on my bookshelf. And she did a qualitative study on people's experiences with sexuality with different groups. And it was very interesting what her findings were, because it was a bit unexpected for her, was when people identified their heightened sexual experiences, the book was called Magnificent Sex, it boiled down to this person I felt this really core connection with. And the next question was, how did you get to that point? And the answer was empathy. So I think that's exciting, because I think it impacts everything.
Yeah.
And it's you have to work at it. It's not always natural.
Yep.
No, it's sure. Not, especially when like my husband is upset with me. It's really hard for me to be empathic, right? When he's upset like that. It's like the first thing I want to do is just kind of close off and say, okay, you go to your corner, I'll go to my corner.
That's hard. And negative emotion is so absorbing in the moment, right? It just feels like it's always been bad. It will always be bad. Yeah.
Yes.
In there.
Instead of really coming from the heart and trying to put myself in our partner's shoes. Yeah, that's just really well said. Lori, where can listeners and viewers go to find out more about you and your practice? I think you've created a large practice with other talented therapists as well. Is that right?
Yes. And most of them actually are also trained in emotionally focused therapy. I mean, we treat other populations as well. Compassionate Connections Counseling is my website. I'm pretty easy to find if you Google me. But yep, we've been around for a while, and I'm proud of my therapist.
That's excellent. It seems like I have every other training but that one, emotionally focused therapy. I missed out. Maybe it's not too late.
Yeah. Never.
Lori, this has been such a great discussion. Thank you so much for joining us. Let me ask you, we like to kind of a closing message is we call it a takeaway of the day. Do you have a nugget, a message, a takeaway of the day that you would like our listeners to remember?
Well, my takeaway is that there's always hope. I have a very easy time being hopeful for married couples. Sometimes I have to say, borrow my hope. I actually got that from Dr. Rebecca Jorgensen, and I think it's so lovely. And I just think things can always be different. It takes repetition sometimes. It takes sometimes a long time when people have been rehearsing these patterns. But I just think that effort matters. And a lot of times small changes bring about really large changes in dynamics in marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I love celebrating those small wins, those small tweaks and changes. Thank you. Liz, what about you? What's your takeaway of the day?
You know, I loved hope too. Hope as well. Lori, I have that same kind of insight with couples, and maybe I don't use the attachment or the injury theory, injury attachment. Is that what it is? Injury attachment.
Attachment.
Debriding, yeah. Attachment injury. See, I really don't know it, but I use debriding the wound. Sometimes there's those old wounds, you know, just underneath the surface, right?
Well, and these models, concepts and just different vocabulary frequently.
Sure, sure. But I get it nonetheless. And sometimes we have to really focus on that injury and really hear somebody out to understand, wow, I had no idea that that's what that was like for you back then. And you've been carrying it all these years. My heart really goes out to those couples who even have the courage to broach midlife therapy, right? It's just such an honor when they come in, because there is really a lot of layers to peel back. So hope is the order of the day. And Dave, what about you? What's a nugget you want our listeners and viewers to remember most about our interview today with Dr. Lori Scatty?
Yeah, I love this, Lori. I'm going to have you repeat it, because I'll blow it. Those three questions, I think, are fascinating. Do you mind bringing those up again? Kind of that check-in, either nightly, weekly check-in?
Yeah. So is how connected are we from the last time we checked? More, less, or the same connected? Next question is, what's been happening in our lives that may have impacted the level of connection? And the third one is, what is one small thing that would help me feel more connected?
Oh, man. I love them. Love, love, love. Because that's what we're all about here at the Stronger Marriage Connection, is finding those ways. So I love that little, those questions, simple little questions that self-reflection brings empathy, compassion, and strengthens that connection. Wow. Well, Dr. Lori Scatty, thank you so much for joining us today. We sure appreciate you. And we will see you next time on the Stronger Marriage Connection podcast. Thanks, friends, for joining us today.
And remember, it's the small things that create a stronger marriage connection. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today. Hey, do us a favor and take a few minutes to subscribe to our podcast and the Utah Marriage Commission YouTube channel, where you can watch this and every episode of the show. When you hit the like button and leave a comment, your feedback helps us improve the show. And don't forget to share this episode with a friend. You can also follow and connect with us on Instagram at Stronger Marriage Life and on Facebook at Stronger Marriage. Be sure to share with us what topics you want us to explore or what you loved about today's episode. If you want even more resources to improve your relationship connection, visit our website at strongermarriage.org, where you'll find free workshops, webinars, relationship surveys, and more. Each episode of Stronger Marriage Connection is hosted and sponsored by the Utah Marriage Commission at Utah State University. And finally, a big thanks to our producers Rex Polanis and Alexis Alcott and the team at Utah State University. And you, our audience, you make this show possible.